My name's Sean Collier. There's Aaron Kleiber.
I am here.
Here it is. It's the big one. It is the top 10 films of 2017.
Yeah.
What will join? Wait, I have to remember now. How long have we been doing this?
This is our fourth year.
What will join 12 Years a Slave and Gravity? That was 2014.
Yeah, go ahead.
2015 was Interstellar. From both of us.
Uh-huh, 2016.
2016 was...
Anomalisa
and...
We're
going to work out what Aaron said the best movie of last year was.
Fences. Fences was my number one last year.
Those aren't the same year. Is this the fifth one we've done?
Maybe it is.
Because my number one last year was Moonlight. We have no idea what's going on in the past.
We got number ones this year.
But we do have our top 10 picks of 2017, our worst films of 2017,
yep.
Surprises, shocks, snubs, S-words, this week in the best of 2017 episode of You Can't Handle the Truth.
Sounds so good when you say it like that.
Thank you. I should be an announcer. I want to be the PA guy for the Pirates. Now batting, that's what I really want to do.
Follow your dreams.
You Can't Handle the Truth.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to You Can't Handle the Truth. The guys would love it if you would subscribe to them, give them a rating and a review. If you like the episode, please just share it. It's super easy. Your kids can show you how to do it. And you can catch me on Add It Up with Your Best Friend Addie, where I interview musicians, comics, just anybody who entertains me. And I tackle a different topic every episode. So come laugh at us as we laugh at ourselves.
It is You Can't Handle the Truth for December 29th.
Is it Friday?
Sure.
Yeah,
Friday.
December 29th.
For the end of 2017.
Yeah.
Happy New Year. What a year it was. We all just put our heads down and got through it. And yes, we did. And here we are.
How many memes have you seen of people just saying, so happy that 2017's over?
Yeah.
Every kind of disgust and eye rolls and...
Yeah.
Banging heads on the wall. What a year.
My favorite is that, what did I see? When are we going to accept that the rapture happened and Prince, David Bowie, and Carrie Fisher were the only ones to make the cut? It was just the three of them.
I was surprised.
The rest of us
were
left behind with Kurt Russell. What's his name? Kirk Cameron. Left behind.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, guys, I told you, we misunderstood. I told you Jesus loves Ziggy Stardust and Prince wearing velvet. Told you.
Yeah.
If Jesus were alive today, he would probably dress like Prince.
That's true.
I'd be like him a lot.
Yeah, no. Now I'm back on board. Now I'm going to show back up again.
Guys, I just saved Sean's soul.
I needed it because we got too much to do. But here's a little church rant. You know, I was at Christmas Eve Mass. You know, my grandma's 90. Occasionally, you show up just to keep grandma happy.
I understand.
And listen, I don't care what goes on in there. I'm not invested.
Mm-hmm.
But they skipped. Here's what they skipped: the gospel. That's what they left out. Pretty sure that's the core. Anything else?
Usually they have scripture readings.
Usually, I don't care if you go to church or not. I'm just saying.
Is it a Catholic church?
It was a Catholic church. If there's one thing we should do in here, it's like, hey, here's a couple things about Jesus. And that, like, anything other than that is kind of like, you could shave this off.
Hmm.
That's the one they skipped. They brought the kids up to the altar, and the priest was like, do you know why?
Oh,
Mary,
right.
How did they get? Where were they going?
So
kids?
He did the whole children's sermon thing for the Christmas and Easter goers.
Yeah,
the C&Ers.
Yeah, left a little to be desired.
Well, Sean, I apologize on behalf of Baby Jesus.
I got more out of the one Jesus movie I saw this year. What the hell was the name of it?
The one Jesus movie this year.
Yeah, I don't know. It wasn't very good.
I know,
but
you're
it was better
about.
Than that service. Anyway. That's a segue to the films.
Yeah.
of 2017, it was a very good year.
You know, there was a point in this year, I remember us saying a couple times, right around like May or June, especially when we were doing our summer preview.
Yeah.
Sure, there was a lot of Marvel movies coming out, a lot of comic book movies.
Yeah.
Superhero movies. And we thought, is this it? Is there just Star Wars? You know, like, is there only... But then we started thinking when we started talking about the fall preview, and then it was like, oh, it's coming. Blade Runner's coming. And then you get all the Oscar push movies. So this year was a pretty good year.
I think it
turned out pretty well.
It did. I think the thing that happened is a lot of our most anticipated stuff actually left a little to be desired, because we both talked about how much we were anticipating Blade Runner, and then it's kind of, or maybe not. It was for me. My number one movie for the fall, you remember, was Mother, and I wanted to set the theater on fire by the end of it. And even It, which we were talking about for 18 months, we both liked.
Very much liked it.
Enjoyed it, but it did not turn out to be
even
the best horror movie of the year. There was a lot of great stuff from unexpected places in 2017.
And Sean and I, we usually have similar yet different lists.
Yeah.
And this year may be our most different list.
Yeah. There might not be a whole lot of overlap.
I feel like this year I've enjoyed more movies just as like a moviegoer.
Yeah.
Maybe because I traveled a lot this year, I needed a little more relaxation.
Right.
So my list is a lot of fun movies.
Yeah, and
it's not like, let's think about racism
or
homophobia.
There is. I'll tell you.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I'll tell
you. The serious movies where I'm like, yeah, we need to change the world. You know, a lot of those where I'm like, last year was, it wore me out. But I'm still woke, guys. I'm still woke.
No,
I still want it.
There's not a lot of fun in my list. That is true. Now that I'm looking at it, I'm like, oh boy, this is some heavy. This is bleak.
Maybe I did not. 2017 made me not want to be reminded of the world we live in.
Yeah,
with those slice of life films.
Oh boy.
I know, right?
All right. So so you're gonna get some variety.
I turned off CNN and was like, "Give me Thor Ragnarok."
That was pretty good.
I needed some fun stuff.
Thor Ragnarok was pretty good.
Well, you always have a good honorable mentions. That's your teens list.
Yeah,
11 through 20 list.
I'll just rattle off counting down 25 to 11 very, very quickly.
Oh,
we don't have time to talk about them.
Sean does this. I do not.
Yeah, it's just I already have it all mapped out for the awards and everything.
He does this at his job.
Yeah, at a desk,
at an
actual desk near a coffee mug and a stapler. 25 in the Fade, a couple of the big foreign language nominees in the 20s. 25 in the Fade. 24, Free Fire. People forgot about that, the action movie early in the year. 23, The Square. 22, Thelma. Horror fans, look for Thelma.
Yeah.
21, The Big Sick. At 20, Molly's Game, the Aaron Sorkin movie. 19, Call Me By Your Name, which is getting a ton of nominations.
Ton of buzz.
18, I, Tonya. At 17, A Fantastic Woman from Chile. 16, Beauty and the Beast. It was lovely.
It was a good film.
15, Last Flag Flying, which actually I knocked down. I gave that a 10 when I saw it, and then I calmed down, and it ended up at 15.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that one.
At 14, Wonder Woman. 13, Logan. Again, by the way, this is, to me, the best year in superhero movie history.
I will comment on that.
I'm sure you will.
Quite a few times.
I'm sure you will. At 12, Wind River. Did you see Wind River?
I did not.
It vanished. It came out, and I was like, "Oh, this is great."
Look, I'm writing it on my old man list.
And you've got a pen and paper, actual notebook.
Yeah.
Go back to Wind River, and it's interesting. That's the interesting story of the award season. No one's talking about. It was a Weinstein Company movie, and you know they were really worried that with everything happening with Harvey, that it was going to lose, you know, it was going to get lost in the shuffle. A Native American tribe, it's about a murder on a Native American reservation.
Yeah.
A Native American tribe basically bought the movie.
Yeah.
And were pushing it themselves because they want people to see it.
That's really cool.
So go back and see when it's streaming now.
There were, I mean, not the just honorable mentions, but there were some good kind of, and I think this kind of started with It Follows, a lot of thriller horror movies. Coming like Black Coat's Daughter, I heard about. I really want to see Nocturama.
I do want to watch Nocturama.
Yeah, yeah. And some cool stuff like that coming
and
out.
You might
with Mother. Mother is, I think, is up there with that weird kind of horror thriller, you know?
And you might be getting some of those in our top 10.
Very true.
Wind River was 12 and 11.
Oh,
At 11, Star Wars The Last Jedi, and my Christmas gift to you is Aaron and I are not going to talk about it anymore.
Thank you so
much. We're
going
to leave it there. Because our friend, a number of people came up to us and said, you guys yelled at each other a lot in that
show. Yeah, we apologize. We got heated.
Our friend Mike McBurney, very funny guy, came up to me and said, I had to take a break. Like, I listened to half of it, and then I needed to go calm down somewhere.
Oh, geez.
But thank you for listening.
We apologize. We got pretty excited.
Yeah.
And and all three of us talk for a living a lot.
Yeah, right.
So when we get passionate, it gets crazy. Oh no, I didn't want to leave out. Sorry, I want to go back real quick.
Yeah.
I didn't want to leave out It Comes at Night.
Yeah, that is not quite to my top 25, but really good movie.
That would be in my teens if I had them.
Yes.
Yeah.
You have honorable mentions beyond It Comes
at Night? I do. If we're going to start with me, my honorable mentions are kind of my 10.
You had a couple tied for 10. So sure, let's give your three-way tie for the number 10 spot.
My number 10 spot, you already touched on it, and this was probably one of the best years for superhero films.
Yes.
I mean, I'll get to those, but I mean, my three-way tie for 10 is Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah.
I honestly think it's top 5 superhero movies ever made. I'm going to be honest.
Spider-Man Homecoming.
It's very good.
Did you and I do an episode about this?
I think we did.
Okay.
Did we?
I don't know.
I don't remember.
I'll check back.
I know we did an episode on it.
Go on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did just look at our whole list for the year yesterday. I don't remember what podcasts Sean and I do together.
I know.
I don't remember what movies we see together.
Yeah.
I'm at a point now where I don't remember what movies I see with anybody.
Right.
I'm like, did I see this by myself in Oklahoma at 10 a.m.? Or did I see this with Sean on a Thursday?
No, we did it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was us.
197. I think it was one of the most well-written Marvel movies to date.
Well, it might have had the best villain in a Marvel movie to
absolutely date. And I think the kid that plays Spider-Man is perfect.
Great
I think
casting.
He's incredible.
Yeah.
Lego Batman.
A lot of fun.
So much fun. So funny. It reminds me of like season 5 of The Simpsons. I mean, it really.
Yeah.
Lego is killing it right now with just silly, topical Simpsons, you know, type humor. Really funny.
Unbelievable cast, too. The voice casting that is perfect.
So funny.
Yeah.
Dude, Will Arnett as Batman is the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah.
And the other tied for number 10 is Thor Ragnarok.
That was really good.
Dude, I saw that by myself.
Yeah.
At like 1 p.m. in the afternoon, and it was a blast.
Yeah.
I was like, this is so much fun. And it's almost, they fixed Thor. I mean.
They really did.
Thor 1 and 2, Thor was terrible. Mm-hmm. It was so bad. 2 was whatever, not great.
Yeah.
And then they were like, you know. Let's make this like Guardians of the Galaxy. And, you know, I think it was a smart thing to keep Thor in space. And, you know, it just was a blast. And they really, it was almost a 180 for me for Thor.
I
like
that
a
on,
lot.
I put that on in the background at work one day. Because a screener came out. And Thor does have some nominations for the Critics' Choice Awards. And I put it on the background. And I had already seen it. But I was half watching it and laughing at gags.
Right.
That not even looking at them. Especially Korg the Rock Monster was hilarious every time.
Well, first of all.
Really? That's an interesting.
You want me to beat him to death?
Yeah. Interesting tie for 10.
Yeah.
Because Thor Ragnarok, Lego Batman, and. What am I forgetting? Thor Ragnarok, Lego Batman.
Spider-Man Homecoming. Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah.
I mean, and those were my three favorites.
Yeah.
You know, and I couldn't decide which one was going to be my 10.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, Wonder Woman was a good film. Terrible third act. But anyway.
That's like the sixth act.
Okay, you're right. Sean and I differ a little bit. I'm not denying that Wonder Woman was very good. But
well, that's, I mean, the undeniable thing, really, and look at your number 10, is this was kind of the year of the superhero. Because
absolutely.
Wonder Woman and
Logan.
We're
going to talk about a couple more films coming up.
The three you just named, but Guardians 2 was good as well.
Guardians 2 was fun.
This was such a fantastic year for superhero movies.
I was really surprised that Thor Ragnarok was a little bit better than Guardians 2.
I think it was. I've seen them both a couple of times now, and I think Thor is more of a pure movie.
Yeah.
That I'm telling you, you might have given Thor Ragnarok a 10 if they had held back on marketing Hulk.
That's interesting.
We talked about that a lot on the episode. But if you had gone in thinking, oh, this is a Thor movie, and Doctor Strange will be in it a little bit.
Right.
And then we get to this planet, and it's building up. There's this mysterious monster. Who is it? What's it going to do? And Hulk bursts out, and you had no idea. You would have lost your mind.
Honestly, I only saw a teaser trailer months and months and months ago.
Yeah.
I didn't know how much Hulk was in it.
Yeah.
And then I remembered a little bit of the comic books of when Hulk goes to other planets and is like a gladiator.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is like a comic book thing.
Yeah.
This is like a whole series he did for 5 years.
Yeah.
Anyway. So, Sean, you're at 10.
Interesting. You have the superhero tie at number 10. And my number 10, from a director that has produced one of my past number ones, my number 10 is Dunkirk.
Wow.
Is number 10.
Wow.
I think a lot of people, yourself included, might be surprised that it's not a little bit higher.
I am very surprised.
And I mean, my reaction to Dunkirk is that it was a incredibly made, impressive movie that did not emotionally grab me like a lot of things. Mm. And like a lot of Christopher Nolan movies. That's the only reason it's not higher. I think
you and I differ in, like, our scale is tipped where you're like really good relationship dramas. You like way more
really
than me.
Really good modern feelings. Yeah. Modern feelings.
And I like military
historic
history.
Conflicts.
Very much so.
Yes. That's
this is
our
a
biases.
Perfect scale for what our list will be.
Yeah. That said, that's the only reason it's not higher. Yeah. The really impressive thing about Dunkirk is this incredible feat of script plotting,
right?
Which we talked about during the episode. But having these three parallel plots that arc together, but one of them covers an hour, one of them covers a day, one of them covers a week. That, I mean, I've never seen anything put together like that.
Right.
And I'm going to hold off because I think we're going to be talking more about Dunkirk a little bit later, safe to say. Yeah. But my number 10 is Dunkirk. What is your number 9?
This is hilarious foreshadowing, I think.
Uh-huh.
My number 9 is The Shape of Water.
Ah, all right. may be some reversals here.
Yeah. I thought Sean highly recommended it right before I saw it, and I was excited to see it. And it was a beautiful film.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, really an amazing Del Toro, like, love letter to this story.
Yes.
I mean, really, really great just visuals. Mm-hmm. The colors were stunning. I mean, what he does well every time.
Yeah.
I mean, just the art direction of his films are just incredible. And you know, the originality. And in the originality, it's not higher in my list. It's number 9 because I think sometimes his originality goes a little far off the spectrum.
That's every once
in a while, and that's what I think why it did not go higher. But we said before, I'm like, he made some choices where I was like, no, not interested. No, I'm not.
Well,
nah.
We'll talk more about it. That's. Now I've taken some people, Renee Ravenel and Steve Gottschalk, who've been on the show before. Mm-hmm. I took them to see it because I wanted to watch it again before I made this list.
Right.
And it was these two reactions again. Renee said, oh, my God, that was one of my favorite movies ever. And Steve said, no, it was really good. It was beautiful. It was well made. But a couple of the really.
Yeah.
So it's all in it's all in whether or not you buy that.
Yeah.
It's all in whether or not you're on
the
board.
The cast was knocked down.
I unbelievable.
Mean, top cast of the year.
Absolutely. I think it might be Sally Hawkins, Richard Jenkins, Michael Shannon, Octavia Spencer, Michael Stuhlbarg. Great cast.
Really good.
I just got a Fox Searchlight. Thank you for the Shape of Water coffee table book, which is a lot of the behind the scenes. And we'll talk about it more. But again, Doug Jones was wearing a rubber suit.
Practical effects.
And it looked... Tell me he didn't look better than Supreme Leader Snoke. Okay, that's the last time The Last Jedi. But... Didn't he look better than the most advanced
honestly,
CGI
creatures?
I mean,
Snoke looked fine for what he was, but
not as
sorry.
Good as the best practical effects
on this
are still...
podcast and most of our guests. Yeah. We will go practical effects every day.
So that's your number 9.
Because you know why? Because we're from Pittsburgh, and Tom Savini and Greg Nicotero are from here.
Exactly. Greg Nicotero, thanks for dropping by Arcade Comedy Theater.
I know.
By the way.
Mm-hmm.
My number 8, and this is where it's going to get a little... no, my number 9. This is this is the pretty artsy corridor of my list.
The artsy corridor.
Yeah, look, this is, I'm not talking to too many people here. Number 9 was a movie called Lady Macbeth. Not actually about the character. This is about a... woman, a young wife in an English manor in the 1600s. It's basically a...
Hey, Sean.
Yeah.
I was about to write down, like, I should watch that.
And then you just stopped?
And then I put my pen down.
Well...
I was going to write it down. You said 16th century manor, blah. I was like, not my thing.
It's one of those, you know... she's married off to some lord of something, and you know, and
story of my life,
right? And bad behavior, you know. It's Downton Abbey if everyone's miserable and just does whatever they want, and
sign me up.
Sex and murder and all kinds of great stuff. Really dark, really, and you know why I liked it? It's a movie without any good guys. It's a movie where there's nobody there for you to like, and that's very interesting.
There's a lot of that happening.
Yeah,
last year or two.
Yeah.
You're like, I don't know if I should like anybody in this. Same with series
and
also.
Yeah, sometimes that can ruin it. Mm-hmm. This is one of those times where it's like, it just unfolds just right.
Yeah.
Again, that's not going to be for everybody, but if you like, you know, candles and nightgowns and bad deeds.
That's kind of, when I said that a TV series, like that's kind of the trend in like, holy crap, I just went brain dead. Like Game of Thrones and, well, the once huge show Mad Men.
Mm-hmm.
I remember watching those shows thinking, I don't like anybody.
Yeah.
Everybody's a selfish asshole.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Oh, this is that extreme version.
Wow.
Yeah. I recommend it. This is one of those, like, you want to tell even your movie nerd friend you saw something they haven't heard of, go see Lady Macbeth. That's number 9.
That's your number 9.
Yes.
Well, my number 8,
uh-huh.
I'm at 8, right? Or am I number 9? Yeah, I'm at number 8.
My
number 8 is one of our most anticipated films of the year, and I liked it enough to put it in as my number 8 because it was not as bad as I expected to be.
Mm-hmm.
It is It.
Okay.
Yeah, It is my number 8. I very much enjoyed the parts that I really liked. I think there was some home run scenes in that.
I liked it more the second time I watched it.
I agree.
Without the weight of those expectations, where I just went back and enjoyed it, I liked it more.
Definitely made me look forward to the second one.
Yes.
The adult one.
Right. Right.
Obviously. Definitely gave me hope. The themes that they hit on and the things that they hit on in the book that the original It did not were really cool. I mean, Kneebolt Street, I mean, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, there were some choices in it, you know, kind of like Shape of Water. I was like, ah.
Yeah.
Ah. But that's my number 8 because it did not, I wasn't disappointed.
Yeah. No, it's especially, again, some great performances.
Absolutely.
It's,
and a lot of practical effects as well.
It's blowing my mind that...
which, by the way,
Remember
we said practical effects amazing in It, and then when they went CGI, we were like, nope.
Yeah.
Nope. That was probably the worst parts about it.
Oh, yeah.
It was the couple moments they went CGI.
Yeah.
And it was very video game cutscene-y.
I can't believe that Skarsgård, Pennywise, is not in the best supporting actor conversation. He was on my ballot, and he's not getting any love at all.
He
was great.
Well, I mean, horror movies just...
Horror villain gets no love.
I mean, you know, we're still looking at Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, maybe this year. We'll get to that in a bit. My number 8... is The Killing of a Sacred Deer.
I
told you, this is the Arty Corridor.
Yep.
The
Arty Corridor.
The writer-director, Yorgos Lanthimos, who did The Lobster last year.
As soon as you said his name, I was like, I want to have a candlelight dinner with him.
Yeah.
Sounds so sexy.
and this is another one where it's like, you better be ready. This is for our more hardcore listeners. This is a horror movie, psychological horror movie.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not giving anything away because the twist in this was the one. I get one twist a year that like wakes me up a little bit. That I'm just in the theater and I go, what? 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 That's what this movie is about. Oh, man. And
Not Sleepaway Camp reveal.
No.
But,
like,
okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Great cast here, too. Colin Farrell and Nicole Kidman in the leads.
Mm-hmm.
It's a family horror movie that'll knock you out. I almost want to compare. I almost want to compare it to Funny Games a little bit.
It's it's based on like Greek tragedy.
I think a lot of what he does has that in it. That's where the title comes from.
What is it, King Eurymedes, or what's his name? Or
yeah, I know what you're talking about.
He's like a supposed to be whatever. Yeah. I don't know what I'm talking about.
No, that's all in there. That's all rattling around in there somehow.
I'm trying to pull Greek out of my college years.
I think I was writing up my top 10 today, and I'm like, on the coldest, bleakest night of winter, when you are alone, and already just lean into that by streaming. The Killing of a Sacred Deer, my number eight.
But if you're
going
to watch it, leave an hour before you go to bed just to process it.
Oh, yeah.
Have a snack, maybe watch a clip of John Oliver on YouTube. You got to let yourself reset.
Go to YouTube and find like top 10 facts you didn't know about Disney villain, you know, just something silly. Oh, yeah, those are great. I can lose an hour that way. Your number seven, Aaron.
My number seven, just saw this, super, super entertained. I, Tonya.
Yeah.
That's my
number
seven.
That was in my teens there somewhere.
Okay, there's multiple reasons why this is a good film, and I honestly think it could be higher on some other people's lists.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of lists. Sean and I look at a lot of lists.
Sure.
And it only fell on a couple of lists that I saw, but I think it's a great ensemble cast. Not like some of the other films, obviously, but Margot Robbie kills it.
Excellent. Allison Janney, unbelievable.
Allison Janney, I really think that she is my pick for Best Supporting Actress right now, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean,
I've been hearing that a lot.
I mean, she blew my mind. Like, I was just the whole time. She plays Tonya Harding's mother.
Right.
Who is, by the way, a real person.
Yes, of course.
And that's what made the movie so intriguing.
Right.
Is that they're playing these people, and it's kind of a documentary, but it's...
You can frequently forget that you're watching a fictionalized take.
It is like they're doing a documentary, like, but then they show flashbacks almost. Yeah. But it's the actors actually recreating videotaped interviews of the real people.
Right.
And this isn't a spoiler, but you're going to love it. In the credits, they show the real footage of them saying exactly what they did in the film. And I'm like... I watched it with my mom, and we not only laughed our ass off at these, like, just this redneck crew of people behind Tonya Harding that made it to the Olympics.
And it's a very, it's almost a Shakespearean downfall.
Yes.
You know what? We're going to save that.
Watch it. And make your own opinion. And I think that this is, it's not as a strong of a story, of course. It's not, there was no murder, but it reminded me of the People vs. O.J. Simpson a little bit.
Yeah, I could see that.
I could really see this being, I could have seen this as being one of those FX series.
Yeah.
Because, you know, those guys right now, they're coming out with the Versace murder.
Right.
That's their follow-up to the O.J. Mm-hmm. I think that they could have done it with this.
And
I really think they could have.
And I think we're going to be talking to you more about I, Tonya in next week's episode.
Yeah.
So we'll have plenty of more thoughts for you there, but I do want to acknowledge...
Didn't come out yet. I can't... Did I ruin that?
No, it's fine. Okay. We're going to talk about it next week. It's fine. But I do want to acknowledge,
there's a lot more to talk about.
Sebastian Stan as Jeff Galluli. You know him as the Winter Soldier.
Yeah, he's Bucky.
And he's great.
Bucky Barnes, really
good. He did a great job, too.
We're going to talk about it a lot more this week, I know, is Tonya Harding's bodyguard.
Oh, unbelievable.
Is a sensational character and also a real-life person.
Tune in next week. We're trying to get an all-star cast for this one because
it's going to
be fun. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, so that's it. That's
your number seven?
That's my number seven.
My number seven is Okja. From Bong Joon-ho. You saw Snowpiercer, right?
Yes.
Yes. I mean...
Very underrated sci-fi action movie.
Yeah, from a couple of years ago. this is, you know, if you liked that, your Okja is even better. And Snowpiercer might have been my top 10, whatever year that was. Okja is a... it has one of those movies with the structure of a kid's adventure movie.
Right.
It's a girl trying to save her pet.
I mean, it felt like a Japanese never-ending story.
Yeah, but her pet is a pig the size of a bus, genetically engineered for a global corporate pig raising competition. Tilda Swinton is the evil overlord of this company, playing two different roles. She's great.
Bananas.
Hilarious role from Jake Gyllenhaal, does a great job. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's a great almost 80s style adventure movie. Mm-hmm. And just something that you kind of just surrender to. You will not.
Yeah, okay.
You will not eat pork for a couple of days afterwards. but a great adventure movie, and it's on Netflix now. This is this was released to Netflix in the U.S., so you can watch that one right now. I think the Netflix thing kind of kept it from getting a little bit more attention. If it was in theaters, it's one of those movies that really, I think, would have caught on, like The Big Sick and Get Out did this year.
Well, I think we're just every year, I think we're seeing a little bit more, and I think we're going to talk more about some Netflix films.
Yeah, that's coming up.
You already mentioned The Big Sick.
Yeah.
Netflix is, and even Amazon, they're pushing now too. I mean, they're putting out some serious original content.
It's interesting because Amazon is trying to do like, okay, this gets a month in theater and then it's Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
Netflix is like, no, we don't care. It's on. Nope. It's out Friday.
Yep.
It's streaming Friday. Wake up and put it on.
Yeah.
Even this Will Smith movie, which I haven't watched it.
That's a movie. It's not a series.
No, that's a movie. Right. I haven't watched it.
Saw a clip.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is happening?
People reached out to me and like begging me, like, are you going to do it? And I'm like, no, I'm not going to punch Will Smith while he's down.
Side note, Midnight Guilty Pleasure. Sean knows because I Instagram him something sometimes.
Yeah.
Snoop Dogg.
Yeah.
Follow Snoop Dogg on Instagram.
Yeah.
He posts like every 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And him just saying that this movie was bullshit, he's calling out Will Smith like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Funny. Anyway.
We'll get more to Netflix later, Okja is my number seven.
Nice.
And you called out Neverending Story. If you like maybe some of those big 80s adventure fantasies, definitely watch Okja. Right. What is your number six?
My number six is Blade Runner 2049.
Oh, okay.
I bumped it.
I underestimated your appreciation.
Really?
For Blade Runner 2049. Based on mine. And look, I gave it an 8. I just was expecting like best movie of the year 10, and I was a little like, all right.
That's fine. And you know what? It was a fresh take on Blade Runner, yet if you are a fan of the original Blade Runner, I feel like it really well. Denis Villeneuve, how do you say it? You're really good at
Denis
the sexy names.
Villeneuve,
that's right. Denis Villeneuve. I mean, he is probably one of my favorite new filmmakers. Like, 100%.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean,
Sicario,
Arrival. Mm-hmm. I mean, so I was super excited when he took it when he was directing and. He didn't let me down. I think that he did a really great job at doing what the original Blade Runner was amazing for.
The look and the feel and the sound.
The feel, mm-hmm. The art direction, the music.
Score is excellent. Hans Zimmer score is unbelievable.
Score. Yeah. Hans Zimmer totally evolved into these sci-fi films.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it wild him doing that? Arrival, Interstellar. Doing things for Christopher Nolan.
Mm-hmm.
Really interesting how he's changed into this electronic composer.
Yes.
Like, I mean, because Gladiator.
Rush is the underrated on the movie with Daniel Brühl and
Thor. You talked a lot
about
that. Yeah.
Amazing.
Incredible
score.
Soundtrack.
Blade Runner 2049, I think I overhyped for myself, like we did for It.
Sure.
But I still liked it a lot and admired it. Like you said about The Shape of Water, it went in a couple directions that I didn't necessarily need it to
absolutely.
Go.
Absolutely. When I'm making the list, I'm thinking, what were my reactions when I was in the theater?
Right.
And that was just like, I remember sitting like, wow, this is awesome.
Right.
Like, there were scenes that were just, you couldn't like talk. You were just awestruck. Not you're not supposed to talk in a movie. You get what I'm saying.
Speaking of that reaction, I believe your number one the year I overrated Anomalisa was Mad Max Fury Road. Was that your number one?
That's right.
Okay. It wasn't The Revenant. Revenant was probably your number two.
Yeah, Revenant
that
was
the same
number two.
Yes.
Yeah.
So now we have completed the list. Thank you, everyone.
That's right.
Yeah. That is your number six, was it?
Yes, sir.
Blade Runner 2049. My number six, I was too busy looking up the best of 2015. My number six is Get Out.
Nice.
This so far exceeded my expectations for that movie.
Absolutely.
That was a movie where, you know, I knew about it. I had seen the preview. I thought, oh, this will be interesting. Let's
right.
Jordan Peele trying a horror movie. That's interesting.
Well, that us being comedians and right. fans of horror, we were like, ooh,
yeah.
What's going to happen?
And then we got there and saw this perfect bit of social commentary.
Yeah.
Works great as a satire. There's so much to say in that, and I think it's really been celebrated for that. It has
yeah.
been celebrated so much for what it has to say that I think people sometimes even overlook. It's a great horror movie.
Yeah.
It's one of the best
yeah.
horror movies of the decade. Absolutely. Great performances. Daniel Kaluuya was unbelievable.
Really good.
But so was Catherine Keener.
Best actor nod, maybe?
Maybe? He's got a shot at it.
Yeah,
absolutely,
I think so.
Has a shot at it and deserves it. Just one of those movies that's kind of perfectly put together.
Yeah,
And has clearly inspired a lot of people. They sent me a coffee table book just of art inspired by.
Ooh, I'd love
the
to
movie.
See that.
Yeah, and maybe we're gonna talk more about. Yeah, I think that's not the last thing we're gonna
yeah.
say about Get Out. Here's our lightning
but,
quick.
Yeah, before we get to our top fives.
Yeah,
we want to do the year's worst.
Lightning quick extra butter for you. The worst of the year.
Well,
I'll let you go first because I have a whole bottom 10. Here's my bottom.
I have three.
Okay.
So why don't you give me your what should we
no,
do?
No, go
here?
Ahead. Knock yourself out.
We talked
movie.
About how big of a superhero year it was.
Mm-hmm.
And for me personally,
yeah,
leave it to DC to fuck it up.
Yeah,
yeah. You won back a couple points with Wonder Woman,
of course.
Good work on that.
Uh huh.
Because you had to leave it to a woman to direct it and make it good.
Yeah,
you stupid idiots.
Yeah.
What do you know? I mean, I'm a married dude of 14 years, by the way. It's my anniversary today.
Oh, happy anniversary.
Yeah, so.
Happy anniversary, Wendy.
I know what it's like to have a good woman get involved
yeah.
and fix things.
Right.
But Justice League.
Right at the bottom.
Hot garbage.
You know.
And it was
yeah.
better than Batman versus Superman.
Oh, it definitely was. I wouldn't have it quite that low, but I'm not going to blame
you. I'm sorry. I mean.
With every passing day, I get angrier about Aquaman.
Right. As much as I liked Wonder Woman, she was the one gleaming hope in that film.
Yeah,
that almost like every time you see Wonder Woman, you're like, thank God.
Yeah,
jeez, just
oh, a superhero showed up.
Gal, do something.
Yeah.
I mean, when we talk about practical effects,
this was the worst.
Sorry, I mean, yeah, okay, Batman's suit is fine.
It's like
whatever.
Watching a screensaver half of that movie.
I mean, Cyborg is bad.
Kids' screensavers used to be. Anyway,
yeah.
Go on.
It's bad. I know a lot of people thought Flash was funny. I thought that
you
was the corniest
yeah.
punch-up jokes.
Well,
it literally brought in like some comedian to just punch up Flash, and it was just corny.
And
the dialogue.
Let's
was
be honest, and an imitation of the new Spider-Man. That's
absolutely.
All Flash was.
Absolutely,
you know, it worked a little bit for me because I really like that actor. But that's what they were doing.
Yeah,
they were ripping off.
And
new
then
Spider-Man.
They tried to make Aquaman Logan.
Oh God!
And it
no.
was like, relax.
Yeah.
Like no reason why some prince of Atlantis would just be a miserable trucker
smashing bottles and.
Okay, why is the prince of Atlantis?
Yeah.
A miserable drunk trucker.
Well, we'll
Why?
Find out in the standalone Aquaman movie next year.
Oh, jeez, oh Lord!
I know.
Save us, baby Jesus.
That's your worst.
That's my three worst.
Well, what's the other two?
The other two is just a throwaway bad. 47 meters down.
That's my number 10 worst. I've seen some bad.
I mean,
movies.
That was bad.
Yeah, that was bad.
The acting was bad. I feel
oh,
bad
because yeah.
poor
Mandy
Moore.
Moore.
I love Mandy Moore.
Yeah.
She's done some great things.
Yeah.
Very
not,
talented.
Not here,
this
didn't.
Was not good.
And
The Mommy.
I didn't even crack my bottom 10. But.
This was the biggest disappointment of the year for me. I had no hope to begin with. As soon as you see that Tom Cruise is
yeah.
starring in The Mummy, the dark universe that I have been dreaming my whole life that they would once recreate or remake
over before
the
it began.
Universal Monsters. You're right.
They're bailing on the whole project because of The Mummy.
Well, they should.
Yeah, didn't work.
I mean, and then they said Johnny Depp's going to play the Invisible Man. I was like,
yeah.
kill me.
Yeah.
Are, like, You know, I mean, there are some serious
horror
directors coming up.
I know.
I mean, look at the people making it.
Well, they're not going to that. They're going to the people who, you know, this is one of those big, like, make it sell all over the world projects. And you see what happens. It's got to, you know, it still has to be good. And that's what I said about DC a million times. Still got to be good.
Well, and I think that, Is Universal the same people that are handling DC?
No, Warner Brothers.
Oh, Warner Brothers. That's right. My fault. It's just that this Dark Universe could be. I mean, go see what Marvel and see what Star Wars are doing.
Yeah.
See what Disney is doing with those guys.
Yeah.
They take somebody that's coming up strong. I know we said we'd never talk about it again.
Yeah.
But you look at Rian Johnson. You look at Looper. You look at those things.
Or Taika Waititi, who did Thor Ragnarok after his last movie was Hunt for the Wilder People.
Exactly.
I didn't even see it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You look at these people that say that are doing really good films that are kind of in the realm of one of these big ones and say, you know what? What's his who did It Follows?
Yeah.
Let's throw him Invisible Man.
Sure.
You know, that's what the studios are doing well right now.
Right.
And the ones that aren't, they're just...
Some people just aren't getting it.
I know. They're giving it to music video directors.
That was a big... there are still music videos? That was a big disappointment. And here are mine.
Who directed The Mummy? Mick G? Whatever. I don't know.
47 Meters Down was 10. Alien Covenant was 9. That was a clunker.
That was circled on my list as really bad.
Wilson with Woody Harrelson. Nobody saw it. Don't worry about it. The Greatest Showman with Hugh Jackman is in my bottom 10. Real, real bad.
My wife wanted to see that.
Not anymore. Mm. Despicable Me 3. That was very bad.
My kids liked it.
yeah, it did not work
out. I'm in a weird place where I'm watching Trolls 9 times a day.
Right.
And I'm like, this isn't bad. I'm getting Stockholm syndrome from kids' movies.
I can understand
that's
that.
That's a funny bit. I gotta remember that.
You gotta bring in some some. You gotta bring in Princess Mononoke or the Iron Giant or something a little bit
I
more.
I do balance them out. They watched Little Rascals last night.
Oh, that's fun.
Really fun kids' movie.
Louis C.K.'s I Love You, Daddy, number 5.
Oh, not good.
Oh, it's terrible. It's terrible even aside from, you know,
him being a piece of garbage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Rings, the sequel to The Ring that came out this year. That's number 4.
Wait, there is Ring 2, though. This is Ring 4. This is Ring 4,
yeah.
I think.
Split, M. Night, I'm not buying it. Not on board.
I know.
Hated it. Number 2 worst of the year is Friend Request. I had a little bit of hope for
Thank
that.
Thank you, Sean.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm adding that. You're absolutely right. That was bad.
Unbelievably bad. But number 1, worst movie of the year, 50 Shades Darker.
Oh, I couldn't even.
Come see what it looks like when a horrible story made by people who don't know what they're doing and don't care. Because the actors all checked out. They're just like, all right, roll.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, all right, fine. A beautiful blend of apathy and shit is 50 Shades Darker.
And you'd figure it'd be like it would get sexier and dirtier, and I heard
nope.
it was less.
Not at all.
Yeah.
So those are our worst of the year. Let's get into the top 5 films of the year.
In. We're getting it in, guys. I know
Aaron,
this is a long one.
Number 5.
My number 5 is Logan. It's Logan.
Okay, yeah.
I thought it was a great film. I honestly think that Hugh Jackman, if he got nominated for Best Actor in a slow year,
I thought about it.
I would not be mad. Mm-hmm. The thing is what's great about Logan, and you're like, wait, number 5 film of the year?
I can't argue with you. It's
in
my teens. It could have ended up in there.
To have a film about a comic book hero and an offshoot story of that comic book hero, okay? I mean, that was some random graphic novel part of this Wolverine legacy or, you know, canon, as you would say.
Mm-hmm.
To make that this, like, you know, kind of deep movie about getting old and finding your purpose. And, I mean, it was just so good.
And great performances, especially by Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart.
Yeah.
Was excellent. And a really effective superhero movie. The getting the kids to safety story worked.
Absolutely
worked. But as an example of what the entirely for adults superhero movie can be. Because even Deadpool, I know no one under 16 should ever see Deadpool, but it's a frat party, you know?
Yeah.
This is here's what we can do for 30 and up audiences. And that was really great to see.
And, you know, it's interesting that all these superhero movies, you're in different universes. You're on different planets.
Yeah.
You have aliens in the sky. Yeah. You know, and then you take a superhero movie. I mean, it is. It's a comic book movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the settings are the desert and the mountains.
Yeah. A car.
And in the car.
Yeah.
And it's incredible.
Excellent, excellent. I really want to go back and watch it again. I only saw it the one time.
That's why that's my number five.
I'm looking forward to watching Logan again, and is for me was the best superhero movie of the year. I absolutely agree with you on that.
I think so.
My number five is Lady Bird, by Greta Gerwig.
Here's the reason. Honorable mention.
Yeah.
It's one of those. Remember when you were like 16th century, blah blah blah.
Yeah.
And then you were like 16-year-old girl.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, okay.
Well, here's the thing for me.
I used to work with kids.
Yeah.
So I was just like, yeah, I know this kid.
For me, it was, you know, she's 17, 18, looking at colleges, trying to get out of her parents' house, and it's set in 2003 when I was exactly that age.
Yeah.
And she is in some of the same circles, like, you know, she does musicals for a while, but she also wants to hang out with the goth kids and all of that. I mean, it's so close to my life and experience growing up.
I just know Sean so on. I'm like, it is.
Right. So it hooked me that way. But
Sean started off as a chorus girl and then became a leading man.
Right. Sort of. But more than that, there's a lot of coming of age stories.
Yeah.
This is a really solid coming-of-age story that really gets into family dynamics in an interesting way.
Yeah.
But it pairs that with Greta Gerwig, to me, is one of the best directors working today. She's kind of been like a writer star for a number of years and a lot of kind of really hipster indie movies. This is the one where she's like, I'm going to have someone else play the part and I'm going to direct.
Yeah.
And that's where she's the best. And Saoirse Ronan, who is already one of the best actresses in Hollywood in stuff like Brooklyn, going back to when she was a kid, and Atonement and Hannah. That pairing of director, star, and story is unbelievable here.
Yeah.
Laurie Metcalf loved it. Oh, Laurie Metcalf. That's the big competition for best supporting actress.
I love her.
Yeah.
Ever since Roseanne, so I love her.
She's
always showed up solid wherever she's shown
up. Right. If you haven't seen Lady Bird, you have to. It'll be back in theaters when it gets every Oscar nomination, if it's left near where you are.
Oh, I forgot about that dude, Tracy Letts.
Loved Lady Bird. Oh, yeah.
He's been done a lot of cool things.
He's done a lot of stuff.
He was just in The Post, Killer Joe, Big Short. Yeah, yeah.
Lady Bird is my number five. What is your number four, Aaron?
My number four is Get Out.
All right. Right about the same.
Yeah, my number four, Get Out, is, and I'll say a little something different about it. A lot of people, you know, going crazy about it, and I like to be a realist. I like to break it down this way, and just hold on. Let me explain.
Okay.
I think a lot of people jumped on it because the social commentary was so ripe. It was so immediate. It was such a perfect timing thing. So, you know, people jump on and say, oh, best picture, best actor, best writing, best director. And it's like, I understand the passion of that, and you know, I could see why that's people's number ones. I can totally understand that. Why I think it's a number one is, number one, why I think it's this good for different reasons is that Jordan Peele, coming from sketch comedy and coming from Keanu.
Yeah. Like, that's his lead-in to Get Out was Keanu.
This movie made me think, oh, he knows about film.
Yeah.
Like, I want to hang out with him and drink a cup of coffee and talk about film.
Yes.
And I want to know his favorite horror movies now.
Yeah.
Like, now I'm like, oh, bro, what do you like?
Yeah.
Like, it made me intrigued. Hey, kids. Kids are on home.
It's all right. It's Christmas vacation.
But it made me like him even more as an artist. Mm-hmm. But also, breaking it down to, this is a Twilight Zone movie.
Yeah.
It's a Twilight Zone movie.
Yeah.
Take out African Americans, you know, take out the social commentary, and it's a really great, I know what you're thinking. You're like, wait, how? But you can't. It's about people stealing people's bodies, you know. Is this spoilery?
No, it's fine.
People seen
it? We've been out for a while.
People stealing,
made some money.
Yeah. When you think about the people stealing people's bodies to stay young, you know what I mean? And you're like, okay, great. But the fact that knowing that Jordan Peele is a fan, definitely has to be of Twilight Zone. Classic.
Absolutely.
I mean, you see that. And for him to make that creative connection and add in the commentary. mm-hmm. into the story and make it all meld together is genius.
Yes.
That's why it's my number four.
And what a great blend of genres yeah. here. To use horror to do that.
Yes. Fantastic.
Absolutely deserves yeah. all of the love it's getting. My number four is The Florida Project.
Good.
Sean Baker is this director's name.
Yeah.
His last movie was called Tangerine. That's worth seeking out.
It was worth watching for sure.
Another slice of life thing. Tangerine was done entirely on iPhones, by the way.
I heard about that.
Shot on iPhones. Florida Project is not, and it looks beautiful, by the way.
It is a beautiful film in a rough setting.
It's, if you haven't seen it, if you haven't heard about it, it's people like absolutely scraping by yeah. their existence. In Orlando, kind of in the shadow.
A step above homeless. I mean, absolutely.
A half step above homeless.
Day to day.
In the shadow
dollar
of,
to dollar.
Of Disney World. You yeah. know, this entire economy is going yeah. with these theme parks and people coming from all over the world
right.
to have these high-priced experiences. And down the road, here are these folks.
Yeah, it's like all the people that, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of people that work those auxiliary businesses
yeah.
on the highway.
The liquor stores
to
and the,
Disney.
The tacky souvenir yeah. shops and the
like,
diners.
You know, you see that a lot of that money's not really trickling to
no.
the community at
no.
all.
And two great performances by people who are completely unknown.
Yeah.
Bria Venini
really
and Brooklyn Prince, 6-year-old with a excellent performance.
Incredible. 6 years old.
Carries the film. Absolutely carries
absolutely,
the film.
Absolutely, yeah.
Willem Dafoe is in it and does a good job. He's the guy you know
He's
in
very
this
good.
Movie.
Yeah.
And he'll probably end up getting nominated for it. But it's a really affecting slice of life. And to me, was kind of just one of those movies about childhood. Just mm-hmm. a movie about how kids
yeah.
find ways to be kids no matter what the circumstances around
yeah,
them are.
For me, it definitely is an honorable mention. I think it was a great film.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I didn't put it into a top list only because I was looking at it as just like, oh, I grew up with these people.
Yeah.
Like, I grew up poor.
Yeah.
I grew up in the projects.
Yeah.
And I wasn't like, oh, wow, this is real life.
It wasn't telling you anything you didn't know.
No, I was
yeah.
like, oh, I know this girl, and she's robbed me before.
Yeah.
like,
yeah.
I was like, oh, she tried to steal shit out of my book bag in 97.
Yeah.
You know, like, I knew these mm-hmm. people that were living in this neighborhood. So it was kind of like an emotional reminder. It's like, wow, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Forgot about that.
Yeah.
You know, never forget mm-hmm. that there are people like that that live everywhere. And I'm glad that the people that do really enjoy it can see that happening.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And not to glaze over the cinematography, too, by Alexis Zabe.
Some beautiful shots.
Not too many female cinematographers getting lauded, by the way. And she should, because just the way it looks in Under the Sun and all of these like pastel painted tacky buildings.
This
great.
Crappy
yeah.
highway neighborhood
yeah.
slum motel in Florida. Yeah. And it's
yeah.
had this odd charm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's my number four. Aaron, you're number three.
My
We're getting
number
up to
three,
the podium now.
I'm going to fly right through this one. Number three is The Post.
Okay, yeah.
I think it's one of the better films Steven Spielberg has done recently.
Yeah.
I thought it was better than Bridge of Spies.
I'd probably agree with
the
that.
The ensemble cast was incredible. And
including both parts of Mr. Show.
Yeah.
Bob and David.
Yeah. And I love that, you know, I love history.
Yes.
And I've been really interested in political history, especially the last 50 years of politics.
Yeah.
And this is just one of those things that a lot of people, maybe our parents know a lot about because they
yeah.
watched it on the news
right.
about the Pentagon Papers.
Mm-hmm.
But really compelling.
Yeah.
Taking a well-known story and making it so compelling. You know the end.
Right.
You know, and I always think that's genius when you're able to take a story that you know so well.
Right.
Like Titanic.
Yes.
You know what's going to happen.
Right.
But I thought it was a riveting thriller.
Well,
I really did.
And especially
Meryl Streep
kind of knows what she's doing.
Tom Hanks was solid, too. Bob Odenkirk.
They are who you thought they were.
Yeah.
Yeah, that cast. And especially this year when to be reminded, hey, this
yep.
is how news works, guys.
Yep.
This isn't some people sit around going, it'd be nice if we did a story about how the president's bad. This is people working, you know,
the
tirelessly
government
to prove things.
Yep.
If
and,
it's in the Washington Post, that means they kind of know it's true.
Yeah, it nestled up nice next to Get Out.
Yeah,
it
did.
Like, these are things that are actually happening today.
Yep.
Yep.
Absolutely. The only, and now I want to defend why it's not in my higher on my list.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason, to me, I liked Spotlight so much two years
Spotlight
ago.
I like Spotlight better, for sure.
And this kind of felt like This suffered in comparison to Spotlight a little bit for me,
Spotlight,
and that knocked
it
down.
Spotlight was
bit.
Like my number three.
Yeah, it was my number two that year.
Yeah, yeah.
And for some reason, I went, you know, I liked it better the other way.
Yeah.
But look, it's Steven Spielberg, Tom Hanks, Meryl Streep. You know what you're getting.
I think I think Spielberg absolutely. Showed up and really liked this.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. That was your number three, The Post. My number three is, oh, look at that. My number three is Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, from Martin McDonagh.
This is the one I just didn't see.
Yeah.
My screener didn't come in.
Right.
I couldn't get to the movie theater, and I'm super mad.
Yeah.
Because I really think I really want to see it.
I think it'll jump into your list posthumously once that time comes. Martin McDonagh is somebody I've followed for a long time. He's a great playwright, Irish playwright. I was paying attention to his movies for a long time and really liked them a lot. So I was excited when he started doing movies.
Yeah.
And the first two movies he did were really interesting, kind of imperfect movies, In Bruges and Seven Psychopaths. A lot of interesting stuff, didn't all come together. This is the one that absolutely all comes together to the point where I thought about making Three Billboards my number one.
Wow.
It's right there. This is one of those unbelievable tragedies filled with great performances. Frances McDormand, obviously, in the lead. But it still has moments that are really, really funny because he can't not be so human and really highlight the moments of absurdity in unbelievably bad circumstances.
Yeah.
It's a movie that doesn't go where you'd expect. It's a ride to go on with Sam Rockwell and Woody Harrelson as well. Excellent performances. I've watched it twice. I'd probably watch it again right now.
Nice.
Three Billboards is my number three. We're getting there. Aaron, number two.
My number two. And I think a lot of people are going to be surprised by this, but I truly think that this is one of my favorite films that I've seen in a couple years.
He's getting us ready. Getting us ready.
Number two is The Disaster Artist.
Oh, my. All right.
And I think, here's what I think.
Okay.
I think people are pushed away by when I say James Franco and Dave Franco. I think people are like, oh, those guys, they're goofballs.
Yeah.
I think this brings James Franco, that crew. There's a crew,
yes.
Franco,
Seth Rogen.
This is James Franco's Big Short.
Wow.
Listen, man, I look at this. First of all, I know The Room.
Yeah.
I laugh my ass off
at The Disaster Artist.
I mean, but it was also heartwarming.
Yeah.
And the fact that James Franco, you know, he's obsessed with this film. You know, he's obsessed with The Room. I think he should be nominated for Best Actor.
I think he might be.
I really think he should be.
Think it could happen.
I think this is an incredible impression of a real person.
Right.
It's an incredible homage.
Mm-hmm.
The way he figured out to make it. The way he figured out how to make it a heartwarming comedy, but also a drama, also a biographical film.
Yeah.
That's why it's my number two.
Yeah.
I think that all of those things came together for Franco. It might have been 15 minutes too long.
Uh-huh.
But everything that he did with this film, a real life story, I thought was sensational. I think this is up there with Sacha Baron Cohen playing Borat.
Oh, wow.
I think this is an incredible method acting feat and direction by James Franco. I really do.
I wish I had seen it through your eyes. I liked it.
I didn't expect anything.
Yeah.
I expected it to be like, oh, The Room. This will be fun. James Franco's a goof.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is really good.
I liked it a good bit. Mary Beth hasn't seen it yet. I'm looking forward to watching it again with her.
Yeah.
I watched it and saw more of a pure comedy and saw more of a good time.
I get that.
But this might have been the biggest thing was I read the book before I saw the movie.
I see. Okay.
And
now I want to read the book.
And I think the book's a little better.
Okay, sure.
And the movie picked not my favorite stuff from the book.
That's interesting. Now I want to go read the book.
What I loved most about the book was diving into who the hell is this guy? what is up with Tommy?
Know.
And the movie was a little bit more about the relationship between the two of them.
Yeah.
Which is not what I wanted, so
sure.
I might have been bringing too many expectations to
it. I thought it was in a fascinating way to wade through the story.
Yeah.
Through him, through his
but
friend.
Hilarious, great cast.
Dude. So good.
Yeah.
So good.
I'm surprised, but like I said, I'm looking forward to watching
it again.
I told
you, I had fun this year in the movies.
Yes, you did.
I had fun.
My number two, and then we will reveal our number ones, because God, we got to get out of here. Number
two. We know our number ones at this point.
Yeah, but, well, people might. I've hinted at it. My number two is The Shape of Water.
Ooh.
You thought it was going to number one?
Yeah.
I thought about it. I did rewatching this week to see, because my my mushy soft heart wanted The Shape of Water to be number one. To me, it's the most memorable movie of the year.
That's a
we'll
good way
talk
to put
about
it.
Number one.
I'm definitely going to start sending Sean mermaid porn.
Yes, it's. I was 100% on board from the first frame.
Yeah.
And like we said earlier, it comes down to whether or not you go, she's in love with the fish man, or if you're like, yeah, okay. Guillermo del Toro loves to present stuff like that without, hey, I know this is weird, but here's the thing, without the long scene of going, but you're in love with the fish.
Right.
Like, with just, yep, matter of fact, here it
this
is.
This is how it happens. Yeah.
And I bought in all the way on that. I love the story, yeah, but when I want to talk about praising The Shape of Water, I talk about the look of it,
yeah,
the art direction, the production design,
yes,
the set decoration, the blue and green, all of those period touches. I talk about the score is unbelievable.
Yes.
Alexandre Desplat.
And
probably.
This is a film, too, that I honestly would not be surprised if it takes a Best Picture.
We'll talk about that leading up to the Oscars.
We'll have an Oscar preview
the
show.
The race, apparently, the last thing I saw was it's a four-way horse race, the post-Dunkirk Call Me By Your Name and The Shape of Water.
Yeah.
It could end up being a Best Picture. It might be too weird for people. It might not. But this is a movie that I want to make into one of the movies I live with.
Yeah.
You know, like some of my favorite movies, like Jaws and Jurassic
Absolutely.
Park, where I want posters up on the wall and I want, you know, the soundtrack in
sure.
my head all the time.
Yeah.
Absolutely loved it. And that's just getting in theaters nationwide now. So
yeah.
Go and see The Shape of Water. There is our lists, everything but our favorite movies of the year. We will now reveal what joins. Wait, now I can do the whole list. The You Can't Handle the Truth Hall of Heroes. Gravity, 12 Years a Slave, Interstellar, Anomalisa, Mad Max Fury Road. Now I lost last year.
Oh, crap. Fences
and Moonlight.
That's correct.
Joining their ranks is Aaron's number one film of the year. We know what it is. Go ahead.
It's another Christopher Nolan film,
yep.
Dunkirk.
There it is.
It's my number one. I love World War II. I can talk all day long about Christopher Nolan. I don't need to.
This hit you right where you live.
Well, I love World War II.
Yeah.
I just love it. I've been playing Call of Duty World War II nonstop mm-hmm. since my mom got it for me for Christmas the other day.
You love Christopher Nolan, and you are such a student of history. You're always reading about the time period.
I mean, I love hearing about this story of Dunkirk. If you haven't heard the story, it's incredible. Almost 400,000 soldiers rescued through the English Channel before the Germans could basically obliterate them all. Fascinating story.
Mm-hmm.
But you touched on it. Christopher Nolan, I do not know how he figures out how to shoot these films.
Oh, yeah.
It's an enigma in a thousand-piece puzzle.
If you look at Interstellar and Inception.
His structure is phenomenal.
And Dunkirk. He's... You know, there's no post-it notes. It is a beautiful mind equation in his head.
It's that meme of the equations over somebody's confused face.
Yes.
I don't know how he figures this stuff out. Him and his brother just sit in a room with, like, algorithms and protractors. I don't know how he does it.
Yeah.
But I think it's spectacular. He casts everything spectacularly. Hans Zimmer killed it.
Great ensemble cast in Dunkirk.
The Stiles boy didn't disappoint us.
No.
But the thing is that he took a small story from World War II, and the fact that you can take a story about a bunch of dudes stuck on a beach and make that entertaining is a feat. that I think, you know, only someone like Christopher Nolan can do. No, maybe a Spielberg.
Absolutely.
You know,
on both of our lists at opposite ends. That's what we did. We flipped Shape of Water and Dunkirk.
And I love it because that's who we are.
Yeah, yeah,
it
absolutely.
Perfectly gets you to know me and Sean.
And if you loved Dunkirk like we did, you got to see Darkest Hour because it's the same time period and the same story from the political side.
Yeah, Darkest Hour, Gary Oldman is up there for best actor.
I think he's
for playing Winston Churchill. I thought he was spectacular. I did. Yeah. It was just a little long in the tooth for me.
Yeah.
And I'm a World War II nerd.
Yeah. It's a performance movie. It's absolutely a look at this great actor doing this great thing. But for more information on the story of Dunkirk,
it's his Lincoln.
It's very interesting.
Oh, yeah.
My number one, joining the Hall of Heroes. We got to name it something. We got to, what's the name of where the Vikings go when they die? Valhalla.
Valhalla.
You can't handle you can't Valhalla the truth.
Why don't we use Mad Max Fury Road?
Yes. Shiny and chrome. Is Mudbound. Everybody,
I knew it.
Is my number one's a Netflix movie, which got like 2 weeks in a theater in LA, so it would be qualified for awards.
Yep.
But fundamentally, is a movie that came out on Netflix. That's why that's one of the big stories of the year for me. Is stuff that is as good as anything at the theater is debuting on Netflix now. This is a great adaptation of a novel by writer director Dee Rees, but more than that. Perfect performances in a really kind of brutal story. There's a poor kind of down on their luck white family buys a farm in Mississippi where nothing's growing, worked on by a poor black family. This is another movie that has a lot to say about, you know, the way race works in America then and today.
Post-World War II.
This is right after World War II. So soldiers coming home from war, families that are seeing generations change right in front of them.
Yeah.
Great performances, especially by Mary J. Blige is the one that's getting nominated for supporting actress. Also, Carey Mulligan. A lot of great performances.
Mm-hmm.
Jason Thompson from Straight Outta Compton played Eazy-E. Man, I hope I got his name right. But... because I put him on my ballot for Best Supporting Actor as well. But I watched most of Mudbound for the second time yesterday, and it's one of those movies where every scene is moving. Jason Mitchell. What did I say?
Jason Thompson, I don't know.
I don't know who that is.
All right.
It's some guy that works, you know.
Yeah, this was... I have no excuse. This is...
Don't worry about it. You'll get to it when you get to it.
This makes me mad.
But
no, not mad in a bad way.
Right.
I'm just like,
yeah.
How did I not watch this?
Oh yeah, you got to see it.
And I hate saying that.
Well,
on this
podcast. I don't think a lot of people have yet. I think, you know, when some of these year-end lists come out,
I think it comes back. It kind of full circle to the Netflix thing,
right?
It's like you just forget about it,
right? Because it's not on. There's not a commercial every day.
You hear about it coming out,
yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I really want to see that, and then it's gone. Like I forget about it because I'm looking all these movies coming out in the theaters, and it's. And
well,
it just, it's one of those things that slipped my mind.
Well,
makes me mad.
I think a lot of people, too, are going to start to become more and more aware of this as Netflix becomes more known for movies.
Yeah.
Because right now, when people are talking about Netflix, they're talking about Dark. People are still going to Netflix for, here's 10 episodes of
Did you watch Dark?
First episode. I gotta get into it. I've been watching movies.
Dude, I couldn't stop.
But
that was a...
Right.
I was like, I have to watch another one.
I'm really interested to start. I'm after this year, especially Okja and Mudbound, two of my top 10.
Yeah.
I'm going to start looking at what movies are coming out on Netflix like I review what's coming out in the theater.
Now.
Here's
you
what's
have
new.
To. Yeah.
But Mudbound, and again, my top three, Mudbound, Shape of Water, and Three Billboards, you could have shuffled in any order. I really, really like all of them. Mudbound ended up on top just because... God, I want to write an essay about every scene.
This is where Sean and we don't tell each other our lists. And I try to make sure I prioritize what I need to see. And now I'm just like, son of a bitch.
Yeah.
I just.
There they are. Mudbound and Dunkirk entering. Valhalla. We'll come up with a name next year.
You can't Valhalla.
But there's the lists, guys.
Elysium. We could come up with.
Nice 2017.
It was good.
A lot of good movies. Some different lists.
You know what, too? I think that we got a lot of human films
Yes.
In the last year or two.
Yes.
This year, you know, especially between your and I favorites, there's a lot of there's a large spectrum this year.
Yes.
Of like superheroes and human films and right? slices of life
and history
and
modern
period
and,
pieces.
Yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. a lot of great variety this year.
Yeah.
There is
absolutely.
there is a best picture for everybody this year, to be honest.
There's a best picture for you waiting at the multiplex.
Cinema.
You can't film. Movies are good. I don't know how we... I don't know. We'll be back. Hey, we're not going to stop rolling. We're going to do an episode on I, Tonya, and then, you know, we're going to get right into it. No, I don't want to do Insidious 4. Sorry.
Nope.